Today is September 9th, 9-9 on your calendar, which makes it Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Awareness Day, the nines being the 9 months of pregnancy. It's an appropriate way to remind us of this issue. It's also FASD Awareness Month. I want to talk just a little bit about this. We haven't dwelled on this when we talk about drug abuse and the problems. Michelle Traeger is a parent advocate for FASD, and she joins us on WGN. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me. This is my bright side for today.
Well, then you are ours as well. I appreciate your listening. And is it true then that maybe people don't appreciate? I think a lot of us have heard about fetal alcohol syndrome or the problems from pregnant mothers drinking. Maybe we don't appreciate the incidence of it.
I think that's true. I think people have maybe kind of an outdated view of what they think someone with fetal alcohol syndrome looks like. But there's actually a range, a spectrum of the effects. And when we have research that looks into the spectrum, we end up with a rate that is actually more than the rate of autism or the neonatal abstinence syndrome, which is in the news with all the opioid overdoses. And so the rate that we're estimating is 1 in 20. And when you think about 1 in 20, that means potentially there's one student in every classroom or one individual on every sports team or at least one individual in every workplace that is in some way impacted by prenatal alcohol exposure.
How much alcohol does a child need to have been exposed to develop this?
That is such a good question. And, you know, unfortunately, the answer is we can't predict that. While alcohol is absolutely the leading factor, we also have to take into account what the genetics are and what the support in the environment looks like, what the maternal nutrition is, what stresses she might be under, because all those things together can increase the effect of alcohol. And what I think is interesting is alcohol affects the developing fetus all 9 months of the pregnancy. So we can't say that at this point it's safer to drink than at another. We also can't say this amount or this type is safer than another. And what's interesting is there are even studies of twins who were obviously exposed to the same amount, and yet they have been impacted in different ways. And so it's unpredictable, and you know, we don't want to say like, let's do this experiment, right?
Agreed, but I would guess that most people would say, and most pregnant women that I know have completely abstained, but maybe once in a while they'll have a glass of wine at a picnic or a family gathering or something like that. I presume that most of us believe what we're talking about here, though, are alcoholic or near alcoholic women. That's not the case?
That is sometimes the case, absolutely. But there's actually some newer research that shows that college-educated women are more likely to drink when pregnant, which is interesting, and that it's not necessarily having the dependence on alcohol, although that definitely is something that we want to reach out and give support for and not condemnation. But it's just the matter of, we know that about 50% of pregnancies are unplanned. So for a long time, a woman might not even realize she's pregnant until she's, you know, probably at the end of the first trimester.
So if somebody has FASD, fetal alcohol syndrome, or they're on this spectrum, what are the symptoms? What happens to them?
Again, that is a range depending on what parts of the brain and body, it's a whole body spectrum, have been affected. And so you might see some physical issues. There's a very narrow window at the beginning of pregnancy where if enough alcohol is consumed, it will alter facial features. And I think that's what most people are familiar with. But you cannot tell that a person has FASD by looking at them. They might have some issues with low birth weight or slow growth, possibly some issues with organs that we don't really notice until that person is growing older. what we're seeing are a lot of neurobehavioral effects. And so those can show up as learning disabilities, can show up as impulsivity, abilities with memory and processing speed, definitely with reasoning and judgment skills. And the really interesting thing is that many individuals who are impacted with FASD, they have IQs in the typical range, but the executive functioning and what they need to get through day to day is what is impacted. And because we don't see that as a disability, we see it as maybe willful behavior, we're not accommodating to help them be successful. And it really is a disability. And the risk is the more competent you appear, the more people assume that this disability is willful misbehavior.
So is there a treatment? Is there a way to cure it or make these people more functional?
There is no cure for FASD, and it is lifelong. There are some research studies about using the supplement choline for mothers who are pregnant and for very, very young children. So what we try to do is work with parents, for sure, because you have to parent in somewhat of a different way, and then to try to work with what those individual strengths are, absolutely, and use those to help them overcome what challenges they may encounter. And that might be at school, that might be in the family environment, that might be definitely transitioning to young adulthood where you're trying to live independently. And so it's not as much about, you know, quote unquote, treating the person as it is informing the systems of care, because we're already encountering these individuals. We're encountering them in the mental health system. We're definitely encountering them in the justice system. So making the people who are working with them informed to recognize it, and then they can intervene more effectively.
Is it recognized as a disability per se?
No, and that is definitely something on the agenda. The state of California, interestingly, they just passed a bill to get FASD recognized as a disability in their school system to get more effective services for it, to get it a named category. But it actually is not recognized as a disability. And the fact is that most people with FASD will not qualify for disability services unless they have an IQ probably around under 70. And many individuals do not have an IQ under 70, but they are encountering difficulties with day-to-day living.
I wonder if this explains some of the aberrant behavior that we see in kids these days. And maybe this has been there all along, but I just know so many instances of reports of kids who seem to be acting out or don't seem to be focusing or doing as well as they should be doing. And if it's not diagnosed or if it's misdiagnosed a lot, if people don't appreciate it, maybe that if it's 1 in 20 kids in a classroom, my goodness.
Right. And I think that's a really good point, John. I think that it does definitely explain some of the behaviors that we see, because you're absolutely right. There is a lot of misdiagnosis, because even some of the medical professionals, they weren't trained in this. They maybe had a paragraph or a page about it in medical school or in, graduate school, but they haven't really had the in-depth training to see this for what it actually is. And so if you're responding to something that you think, that might be oppositional or that might be ADHD, but really it's a part of the brain that was impacted by the alcohol exposure, then you would deal with that differently.
Michelle Traeger is a parent advocate for FASD. FASDUnited.org is the website, FASDUnited.org. Okay, 9/9 is the date. Today is the day for awareness. It's the month for that as well. You got some activities coming up. What's going on?
Yeah, so for FASD Awareness Month, the big thing right now is we have a text campaign. You text PCMMYP to 50409, and that program will send letters to your two state senators and congressional reps asking them to enact the FASD Respect Act, which is great. It's proposed bipartisan federal legislation to reauthorize some funding, and it's not seeking to create a new system. It's seeking to get those FASD-informed care into existing systems. We have over 60 congressional reps and 9 senators signed on. So far, we only have one from Illinois, Representative Lauren Underwood. We also had from Chicago, State Senator Sarah Feigenholz released a press release just yesterday in recognition of FASD Day. So we are building some awareness and we're getting some lawmakers on board, which is really the main point of FASD month and day. There's also a virtual 5K. Everyone's got a virtual 5K. It's called Run Fast, RUNFASD. And you can find that at runfast.org. It's running for the next 2 weeks. It's a virtual 5K. So that's just advocating and raising awareness, getting school districts to put it on their calendar. My school district just did. Lots of ideas.
FASDUnited.org is the website, too. That's probably easy to remember, too. FASDUnited.org. Wow, Michelle, I'm glad we had this conversation. News to me, today is the day, this is the month, and we'll keep it in mind.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it so much. I brought a quick speed joke, if you want one.
Well, it better be good, Michelle, because as you may know, the bar for speed jokes is very high.
This is from my junior high daughter, so you know it's excellent. How much does it cost a pirate to get his ears pierced?
Oh, I've heard of all the pirate jokes. Let me see if I know the punchline to this one. How much does it cost a pirate to get his ears pierced? Two buccaneers.
A buccaneer.
A buccaneer. A buccaneer. I was that close.